You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Well, if it's Thursday evening and we're here in the Edge Radio studios, then Garth...
Yes?
We must be the Dice Men Cometh, or at least... two-thirds of the Dice Men Cometh, because someone is working or something,
asked.
Couldn't be bothered to be here.
Yep.
So we are two-thirds of Australia's leading board game, tabletop game, card game podcast.
We certainly are.
And tonight, Garth, it's very exciting.
Why?
We have a special guest in the studio.
Thanks, Mark. You never call me special anymore.
That's because it's not you, Garth.
Okay.
It's an even more special guest than you.
Yeah?
You are fairly special.
Well, only every so often, but yes, who is our special guest?
So tonight we have a special guest, Marty Abel, a local here from Hobart.
Only a recent local.
I was going to say, he's not a Tasmanian, though.
Yeah.
But he hasn't got
his second head scar removal.
Right. He is an Australian, and he has created the art for a great new game. So not only are we going to talk about Marty and his art, we're going to talk about the game, and... we're also going to talk about an exciting new board game award.
Really?
That's been released in Australia.
It sounds amazing already. I'm really intrigued.
You and I had something to do with the birth of that award.
We did.
I mean, I don't want to go into details, but we'll talk more about it later. So we've got all those things.
Yep. And is there anyone we're sponsored by this week?
As usual, Garth, we're brought to the amazing listeners by Area 52, Tasmania's leading pop culture store at 102 Elizabeth Street. And they sell board games, card games, graphic novels, manga, and anime. I always get those two mixed up because I think they're the same, but maybe there's some distinction there. Maybe Marty can shed some light on that later. I don't know.
Possibly.
But yeah, Area 52, they are supporting us. Thank you so much to them. Thank you so much to Edge Radio, of course. That's why we're here, talking out loud live for the people of Hobart and across the world of the internet to all those board gaming, tabletop gaming nerds who'd love to hear us every week.
Definitely. So look, it is episode 211. We are thanks to Area 52 for their continued support. We are on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. I've told my loving partner that I will give a big shout out to her brother and his wife and their kids. So hello, Fred. Hello, Paris. Hello, Tyson. Hello, Ryder. Welcome to our little island. We are the Dice Men Cometh, and we will be back after this song.
You're here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. And that was Noga Erez with their song Toy. Now, Garth, you know where you can buy some toys?
I do, actually.
Area 52.
Far out. What a segue, Mark.
What a segue. But, Garth.
Yes.
We're not here to talk about Area 52 too much.
No, we're not.
We're here to talk about the games we've been playing and to talk with our special guest, Marty. So, firstly, we've been playing a game.
We have.
We played it just the other night, the two of us, a few times.
I know.
We're not going to talk about what happened, though.
We are going to talk about what happened. Can you hear it in my voice?
And this is the game that Marty, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
Has done the art for.
He sure has.
The game is Crystal Clans by Plaid Hat Games.
I know. And look, I'm going to introduce Marty right now. Mm-hmm. And Marty, you do have a confession to make. You are not a gamer.
I'm not.
And that's fine, because board gaming, as you will find out, is the most inclusive hobby out there. So, welcome.
Thank you very much.
We love your art, and one day we will beat you down to become a gamer. It's very, very simple.
I'm on my way.
That's awesome. So that's wonderful. Yep. So, look, if you don't mind, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the game that you have had no involvement in apart from creating all the wonderful art. Is that okay?
That's totally fine.
Lovely. So, look, we are talking about Crystal Clans by Plaid Hat. The main designer, Andrea Mezzatero, but it's also got a fair bit of influence by a little known, is it Colby Douch?
Colby Douch, yeah, the founder of Plaid Hat Games.
You know, might have had something to do in this little hobby of ours. We are lucky enough to be in the room with the artist who created all the wonderful art, which we will no doubt get to as part of our conversation. But before we get to that, what the hell is Crystal Clans and why would you want to play this game? Well,
what the hell is Crystal Clans and why would you want to play it?
Well, look, Crystal Clans is a two-player fantasy battle game that isn't Summoner Wars,
mm-hmm.
because it has a lot more fairies, and it has a lot more stones, and it has a lot more meteors, and it has a different style of board. But the very simple way that this game has already been talked about is that it is a slightly different version of Summoner Wars. But essentially, it's a two-player card-drawing, card-playing game where the board itself is where you will again find yourself maneuvering cards around the board, trying to control at least two of the three crystal spots on this board.
And what happens when you control those, Garth?
Well, then you get to spend a hell of a lot to try and get some crystals. And ultimately, the player who wins will be the player who is the first to four of those said crystals. Now, the great thing about this game is it says it plays from 30 to 60 minutes.
Yep.
Now, we played it a couple of times a few nights ago.
Yes.
And even in our very first game for the notoriously slow Dice
yes,
Men,
that's right.
We got that first game in and done
yep.
from teaching to someone whose name ends,
don't mention it.
Ends with H and starts with Gar. One.
Oh,
it was fun, Mark. It was really fun.
There was still some fun in there, Garth.
So, look,
sure. Yeah.
This game is a two-player skirmish where you are basically just laying smack 'em down to try and control those two of the three Crystal Clan spots so you can collect the crystal. The thing that I really like about this game is that it sets up in next to no time.
Mm-hmm.
You play the board down. You choose one of the six included factions, which is a great way to start. You've got heaps of possible options.
Yeah.
I can't do math, but when you've got six different factions, there's a lot of combinations, I'm sure.
Well, it'd be each two sets, so it'd be like 6 and 5, 6 and 4. Yeah, lots.
Yeah. Excellent. They call you the human calculator for good reason there, Mark. But you sit down, you basically shuffle your deck of cards, you shuffle the deck of crystal cards and place three of them face up. You draw five cards, you figure out who goes first, and then most importantly,
yep.
you place this tiny blue crystal on space number 0 on the left-hand side on the initiative track.
Yeah, and this is, to me, it makes the game, and it is something that I haven't seen in a game, is how the swing of initiative, because every action you take, there's a certain cost involved, whether it is summoning creatures, whether it is moving, reforming your squad, attacking, drawing more cards, all of these have various different costs. And you move the cost off with this crystal on the initiative track, and it goes, as you said, 0 in the middle, 1 either side. Those three spots are one particular colour.
Yeah, they're all considered neutral spots.
Yeah. And then you go into sort of your territory or your opponent's territory. And so as you spend, the crystal moves towards your opponent. And once it gets out of that neutral zone, the 0 and the 2 ones, as soon as it gets out of there, it's your opponent's turn. They can spend as many points as they want in one or more actions, but then it's going to swing way back over the other side. And it's a beautiful balance, because if you do something huge that spends a lot of initiative, you then give your opponent an opportunity to do huge stuff back. And even though, look, let's just get it out there, Garth, you were caning me.
Yeah, but only every time we played it.
when I wanted to try and do something huge, I could sort of throw something massive at you, but then that huge swing of the pendulum, I was just waiting for it to come back and smack me in the face. It's the balance in the game.
Well, look, it is the great leveler, because it doesn't matter the cards you draw. They could be massively powerful cards, but if you haven't got the initiative to be able to spend to play them, they're just sitting there, not clogging up your hand, but just taking space where you would otherwise want to get them out and onto the battlefield. So the way this is going to work is, on your turn, you're right, you've got to see a series of actions that you can take. So, look, if you're short of cards, you can take a replenish action that will get cards back into your hand. But the way you're more than likely going to start this is by summoning the creatures from your respective clan onto the board. And you can only generally do that in one space, which is your home space on the board.
Mm.
It's got this lovely little castle door. I'm sure it's got a technical name, like a
drawbridge.
Yeah. And that's where you'll place those cards. And as soon as you place them down, you can play 1, 2, 3 is generally considered the largest squad that you can have.
Although
certain clans yeah, have different abilities that might
right,
allow you to place more and then beat Mark. But that's not worrying about that. So you'll place down 1, 2, or let's say 3 different cards from your hand. And each of those cards will be warriors, fighters. They'll be members of your clan, and you'll have 3 heroes per clan, and you'll have 6 common cards per clan.
Common type of cards.
Exactly.
And many of those you'll have multiple copies.
Correct. Each deck is 27 cards deep, so you'll be potentially siphoning
27.
Through it quite
long. It seemed a lot less, Garth.
Well, that's only because we'll get to that. So, summoning action, you'll pay the summon cost. The cards have various summoning costs from 0 up to a lot.
Yeah.
And that is where you'll start to spend your initiative, because whatever the summon cost is, you're spending that on the initiative track. And because the little jewel starts at 0, your first turn might be summon, and that's it.
Yeah.
But the other turns you're going to be able to have is, as you say, you can reorder, which is going to allow you to place different cards in the order on which you place them on the board, because although you can only have a maximum of 3 in each tile, they have a top, a middle, and a bottom. And the reason that's important is because the card that is on the top has the special ability.
Yeah.
Whatever the special ability on that card is going to be the one that applies to the whole squad underneath it.
Yeah,
and there will be times when you want to have a certain card on the top when you're playing that squad and summoning it out. There will be times where you want to have a different card on top when you're about to go into a battle over a crystal zone. And it just gives you that complete flexibility to tuck a card at the back and kind of hope that the opponent's not going to notice until you're ready to do this big reveal as part of the reorder action.
And look, from the card, we played 4 of the 6 factions by the time we finished. The special abilities were all really varied.
Yeah.
From just like one simple keyword to multiple things and abilities where when you summoned, you could do a certain thing. When you attacked, you could do something. When you destroyed another unit, when you were destroyed, really switched it up. And the fact that you, in that squad, you might have 3 completely different things where one time you want to attack, reorder your squad so that you get one particular ability on the top and the others don't do anything except contribute their sort of attack and defense values. I really like that because often you'd have to think, oh, I really want this one on top because it's going to trigger that ability. But then there's also the figuring that, but the one on top is actually going to be potentially the first one to be
destroyed
yeah. because you destroy from the top
down.
Well,
we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to that yeah. because part of the reorganization is that you get to readjust things. You get to move, and generally you get to move 1 space per unit. However, there are flying units that will allow you to move 2. But an interesting thing with movement, and the board gets pretty crowded pretty quickly because how many squares are there, Marty? Is it 9 potential places? Do you remember?
That's a good question.
I think it's 9.
1, exactly.
2.
It's not many.
Yeah.
It is very crowded.
Yeah. It is super crowded. So on my very first turn, I would do a summon, and then I moved a couple of my units out. But then I had these flying units that I wanted to then release the next time and fly them further ahead. However, as soon as any of your friendly units arrive into another square where there's already units, you've got to basically do a reorganize already. And because you can generally only ever have 3 units of one side in each square, if you've got 4 or 5, you've got to basically choose to get rid of ones and throw them away, which is really, really quite a tough decision to make in such a compact board. So anyway, you can summon things, you can move them around, you can reorganize them, but the way this game is really going to be played is over these 3 crystal spots on the board, because they are all that really matter, with the exception of your home zone, Mark, which is where
yes.
I've laid quite a lot of smack.
Yes.
So let's talk about battling. Now, each of the cards are dual purpose. They will either be a unit type, or down the very bottom, they will have battle abilities. Now, the battle ability will only make sense when you start to have a fight, because the first start of a battle is that you are going to essentially each choose a card from your hand mm-hmm. and you're only looking at the bottom ability, where it becomes a little bit of a rock, paper, scissors situation, because there are 4 symbols on those battle cards. You've got the turtle shell, you've got the foxtail, you've got the bull. And is there one that I'm missing, or is it really only 3?
I think there's only 3.
I think there's 3, loops around, that's all. So you're each going to be playing those simultaneously face down and then do a big reveal, ta-da! And the ability that you've triggered will depend on what your opponent has played and what the symbol is that they've done. And that's a really cool mechanic.
And you've got, because the card's therefore a dual purpose, because you've got the unit type and you've got the attack ability. And what I noticed, Garth, was that the more powerful units also had the more powerful attack ability.
It's
which
almost
means,
like you have to make a tough decision.
That's right. Then you're deciding, am I going to use this card to be a unit?
Yep.
Or am I going to use this card for its attack ability? Now, sometimes when you play that attack ability, part of what triggers is you're able to put that card back in your hand. But often, if that doesn't happen, you have to then put the card into the discard pile.
Yeah.
And if that's one of your three super mega heroes that's going to bring the smack, you'd really worry about using it for its attack ability and then having to discard it straight away. Because unless you've got some special ability, or unless you wait until you get all the way through your deck and shuffle them back, which has dire consequences, you don't get like a second chance to use that card.
Not at all. So you go into battle and the first thing you do is you're choosing this card. And look, because you've only ever got a hand limit of five, the decision can be really quite tough because a lot of the time you will have already spent some of the cards in your hand in summoning new creatures. So you might only have two or three or in some cases no cards left.
Yeah.
And the game is pretty brutal because it says you have to play a card. Yeah. You can't just go, nah, I'm not going to do one this time. Even if your hand is empty, you just have to flip the top card from your deck and go, well, that's the one I'm playing. Let's see what plays out. So you've done that. You then compare what the special bonuses are on each side, apply the effects, and then you go and actually look at the cards involved in the battle. And it's quite simple. Each card has three abilities on it. You've got an attack, which is a sword symbol. You've got a defense, which is the shield. Mm-hmm. And then you've got basically the cost to move it.
Activation cost.
Yeah, which, look, it makes sense when you're reordering and moving it, but it doesn't really play a feature in the actual battle. And the way the battles are resolved are simultaneously. So, Mark, if I have 12 damage that I'm dealing to you and you have 10 shields, I'm going to get through cards in an order from top to bottom, as you say, because there might be the first card that has a shield of 4. Yep, destroyed. Next one has a shield of 1. Yep, destroyed. But the last one might be a shield of 8. Oh, I can't get through that anymore. Yeah. And whatever damage you're dealing back to me happens simultaneously. So battles can result in both sides almost being decimated or hopefully, and as we've seen, generally your side being decimated. But that will be, then once the battle is resolved, it doesn't always end in an absolute conclusion.
Yeah.
There will be times where there are still cards from either player on there, and it then might be the other player's turn to decide whether they want to continue that battle on their turn. Because, of course, like everything, having a battle, it costs initiative as part of your reordering action.
Yeah, that's right. And because clearly what you're trying to achieve is, okay, now I'm back in control of that crystal spot. I've got another crystal spot. So now I've got two crystal spots. I can buy one of those crystals. And let's say, you know, those crystals, the ones we saw were sort of between 7 and 9 was the cost.
Yep.
So, yeah, you get one. That's one quarter of the way to victory. But you're moving your initiative marker 7 to 9 towards your opponent. Sometimes that was a really big swing. And yeah, that decision of, oh, do I want that crystal? It's actually quite a tough decision as well.
I didn't find it was a tough decision because it won. But you are right. You know, this game has swings and ebbs and flows all depending on that initiative track. And the great thing is we've pretty much explained how the game works. It's really quite simple. The replayability all comes within the different factions that you've got, the different clans, of which there are 6. And there are fairy clans and meteor clans, and there are stone clans, and there are blood clans, and no doubt Marty will possibly talk about future clans that may or may not be coming out, thanks to Plaid Hat. But the joy in this is getting to know the clans.
Yeah.
And look, in our first game, and I'm sure it's like every other player who has started out with this style of game, you spend so much time looking at the cards and going, I've got an ability that does that. Ooh, but my other card does that, and really struggling over the decision, primarily relating to the summon action, which is when I'm placing my clan members down onto the board, who's going on top?
That's right. Well, who am I going to have? Who gets to go on top? Who gets to be the meat in the sandwich and who gets to go on the bottom? But then, you know, some of them had really clever abilities of, well, I summon this card, but at some stage later, I can summon another card and it actually takes the place of that card and that other card comes back and all these tricky little special abilities. That, I mean, I really liked that. That was quite clever.
Exactly.
And quite thematic when you looked at, say, for example, one of the clans I've played was the, can't even remember what they're called, the strong clan, like the builders. No.
Stone Clan?
That's the one, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, with their
and
siege
so
towers.
They were sort of like men, big and women, you know, big strong men and women, and they had structures that were siege towers and ballistas and things like that. And so they had a sort of a special clan ability that almost everyone can do, which is, oh, I can build that structure, and it is basically built where I've already got guys. That was really clever and very thematic. Whereas we had other ones like, what did you...
Oh, it was the Flower
what was
Clan
that Poxy
for the second
had,
time.
Yeah.
Poxy, far out. These guys are the sneakiest little mofos that you will ever see because a lot of them cost zero to summon, and they could flitter around the board, and
they could overtake little
crystal spots, and they could run away from battle. I love those guys. Some people have accused me of being a sneaky bugger as well, so I do have a bit of an affinity with them. But look, the way this game is won is by getting crystals, and there are always going to be three face-ups so that you can choose. Each of the crystals will have an immediate effect, potentially.
Yeah,
you can buy it and something will happen straight away. Yeah. Or you can play it when a certain event triggers or when you want it to trigger during a battle or during a phase of the game. You'll flip it face down to show that you've sort of used its ability. Still counts as a crystal, and it's really quick, quite easily. First to four is going to win.
Yeah.
And that happens bloody quickly in times. Even our second game probably played in half the time that our first game went. The only thing we haven't really talked about is that if, say, for example, you on your side have a giant crocodile card called Big and you're able to lumber this big card all the way to your opponent's home zone.
Lumber? That thing sprinted across the board.
You're the one who spent all the initiative and gave me enough to do this. You're allowed to then basically invade your opponent's home zone, which means that you will deal damage directly to your opponent equal to whatever damage amount that your cards, your army, your squad are delivering. And what that does is make them discard whatever that number of cards is. Mm. So my giant crocodile Big by himself would deal 12 damage. Mark had to get rid of 12 cards.
At
which
that
was
stage, awesome. I only had... 9 cards left in my deck.
Yeah, which forced you to reshuffle.
Yeah.
And as soon as you force your opponent to reshuffle, you get a free crystal, which is amazing.
Yes.
It is so cool. I'm sure you can appreciate that, Mark.
But I did love, you know, and one of the challenges in so many of these two-player dueling games is, you know, you get to the end of the deck, it's game over. So you've then got to have a big enough deck to last for a while, you know, in Magic 60 cards as an example. Well, as you said, this game has 27, but you shuffle them and you get them back. So it's not like 27 cards gone like that and the game's over. You get to, if you want to burn through your deck, you get to burn through your deck and do lots of damage and smashing and playing battle cards and everything. You might give one free shot at a crystal, but you get to put that deck back together again. And I really like that, because if you don't know what you're doing, you might lose one crystal, but you get a second chance.
That's right.
And we said, you know, I can see there being, sometimes you get a bit of a stalemate situation in these two-player games, but because there's so few spaces, you can't run away and turtle up.
Oh,
there's nowhere to go.
My fairy clan can. They were flittering around because they had a lot of battle abilities which allowed them to move to adjacent squares and basically go, you can't touch me.
But I mean, there's mostly, apart from the flowers, there's mostly nowhere to run and hide to stop. And if you run away, of course, you leave those crystal spots exposed, where if the other player gets control of two of them, they can get the crystal. So there's nothing really to hold up the game for too long.
No.
Even if you've got a bit of analysis paralysis about what you're going to do, it's going to move fairly quickly.
Exactly. Look, the only sort of criticism I would have of it is, and this is from our two players, so it's very early days, is that almost always we found ourselves battling over the one middle crystal. But two of the crystals are within one space of your home zone, so almost always your turn would be summon something, move them into that crystal zone, so we were both controlling one, and it was then a race for this third one, and that's where the majority of battles would happen, especially in our first game.
Yeah.
Second game was a little bit more dynamic, and it just highlighted to me how variable the clans were in the game. So the board is a very simple layout, and you can reset it in 30 seconds. It's all about the synergy or the lack of synergy between the clans that you fight. And of course, there will be clans that work really well against each other. There'll be ones that won't work as well, and that comes through playing the game and playing the different combinations over and over. So I'm really happy there's so many different bands in the base game.
Although I'm confident, given Plaid Hat's records, and you know they've done Summoner Wars, they've also done Ashes: Rise of the Phoenix Born, which
is two player, not four player.
We enjoyed two player and didn't enjoy it with more than two players, but I think they've got a really great background in these sort of two player battle card games, where they, I'm sure, have done a heck of a lot of playtesting to get that balance right between all of the factions out of the box. Because that is one of the hardest things. And then obviously, as, and I'm sure they will, expansions are introduced, maintaining that balance is a real challenge.
Correct. So look, I really like this game. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think our initial thoughts are completely correct in that it's all about these clans and you want to go and play it again and again and again. You need to look and read the cards and get over that first game, which is going to be reading and just playing it a little bit slower, because as I said, we found our second game moved a lot more quickly just because we already understood what the abilities meant, how it all played. So, yeah, I think you buy this game, you will get a lot of play out of it before you even need to consider expansion.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, firstly, it's got some absolutely amazing art. I'm going to talk about it soon, so it's beautiful to look at. Oh, question, Marty.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do the board?
I did everything.
Ah, fantastic.
You did everything?
Yeah. Well, apart from the graphic design.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of art.
Yeah, no, cool.
I didn't know anything else.
Curious about the board.
Yeah.
To me, you know, it has the art is amazing. It really draws the eye. And thinking about who you're looking, sort of targeting this ad for people who have maybe had kids who've been playing Yu-Gi-Oh or Pokemon or something like that, this is perfect for that sort of crowd because they've got card game mechanics down, but it introduces that tactical element of moving around on the board. But it's not a massive big board where they get bored because it takes a long time to move. It's also close, so it's great for that sort of a crowd, but also for people who have played Summoner Wars and have had that, I don't know, two-hour battle or whatever. This condenses that down a lot more in terms of time.
There is no downtime.
But you've still got the interplay between the factions, interplay within the faction. You've got a lot of variety there. Ashes was another one where Ashes had a lot more. There's just lots more going on with the cards between the dice that you have to roll to create the sort of the currency that you use to play out the cards. This, again, it would certainly, once you've played this, you might really be interested in expanding into Summoner Wars or Ashes or Magic or all those sort of card games.
I completely agree. So that's Crystal Clans.
Yeah.
We are going to cut to a song, and then we're going to talk about with the guy who did everything, apparently.
Yeah.
All of it.
All of it. So, Marty, stay there. We are going to throw to the song. We are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and of course, thanks to Area 52. We'll be back after this song.
Hey, Garth.
Hey, Mark. How are you going?
Oh, I'm going really well, but you know what else is going really well?
What?
The Black Void role-playing game Kickstarter campaign.
You mean that dark fantasy role-playing set in a dual reality?
Absolutely. It's over 135% funded, which means not only is it absolutely going to be produced now, but they're starting to unlock the stretch goals.
You mean like the one that gives you even more art? I think it's over 100 different pieces of art are going to be in this core rulebook now. So even if you, like you, Mark,
yes,
only like things for the art,
yes,
this is the dark fantasy role-playing game for you.
And look, this does have some amazing art. I've been reading the comments since day one, and people have been asking, more art, more art, how can I get more art? There's the answer, that stretch goal's unlocked. But also, Garth,
what? Woo!
Ambient audio! Ambient audio. We all know ambient audio makes a role-playing session much more spooky. But there's more, Garth. They've also unlocked part two of a new adventure module, When Darkness Falls.
No way, not part two. Now, I have a feeling that this module is pretty special.
It is.
Why is that?
Because it was co-written by John Crefield and Dan Cross.
Not the ones who've worked with Gary Gygax in the past.
The Gary Gygax. The E-Gary Gygax.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. But Garth, there's more to come.
What?
There's custom D12s to be unlocked, and everyone loves a D12.
Do they ever?
Haven't rolled the D12 since back in the old barbarian hit dice days.
Showing your age.
Then, When Darkness Falls, Volume 3, the third of three parts of that mysterious adventure. And who doesn't love a GM screen?
I do, and certainly Leon does.
He does.
Yes.
And even more spooky ambient tracks.
Wow. Now, you also wanted to talk about this new skill that you've learned, is that right?
Oh, yes, Garth. I have picked up on how to use mysticism.
Ooh, sorry.
Because that's the other power available to characters in the games. There are beings born, you know, Garth, with extraordinary powers of the mind. Clearly I am one.
Clearly.
Beings who can make phenomena occur by sheer will and do things ordinary mortals cannot. These individuals, like me, are known as mystics. And it's said that mystic powers are related to the influence of the void. And that there is a seed of the void in the mystics, allowing them to alter reality. Moreover, it is whispered these powers are hazardous, yet strangely compelling to those who know how to channel them.
Oh my God, you mean mystics are, perhaps rightly, and unlike you, feared among mortals, as their powers are wondrous, can manifest unbeknownst to those around them and subtly alter reality, ever so slightly, to affect events and outcomes as they see fit. While this is true, some mystics occasionally engage in more blatant displays of pure, brutal force, such as tearing structures down, simply by gesturing at them.
Oh, Garth, mysticism allows a character to change the reality of the cosmos according to their will. But tampering with the fabric of reality is not without risk, and sometimes the mystic loses control. When control is lost, a calamity occurs. The mystic power echoes with the void, essentially turning the mystic into a conduit of chaos and alteration, with the forces unleashed taking a life of their own.
Oh no!
Whilst not all calamities are harmful, they cause strange occurrences. And in a world where the influence of the void is particularly intense, calamities are also increasingly potent.
That sounds scary, Mark. Now, are you ready to put your newfound mysticism to the test?
I am, Garth.
All right, what are you going to do?
I'm feeling a bit peckish.
Yeah?
I think I'm going to mystic us up something to eat.
Nice.
How about a pizza?
That sounds great.
All right, stand by, Garth.
I'm standing by.
By the power of my mysticism.
Mark? Mark, where'd you go? Mark? That's a bit odd. Hello? Who's there?
Garth, it's me!
What? Where are you, Mark?
You never guess where I am!
That's true. Where are you?
I'm getting us some pizza from the Leaning Tower of Pizza!
What? You are the worst mystic ever.
Garth, how do I get back? Get your ticket!
So Black Void RPG is the dark fantasy. It's set in a dual reality. If you, like Mark, want to be a really crappy mystic, or potentially level up and become a good one, go check it out on Kickstarter. It's got a bit of time to go. It's over 135% funded, and those stretch goals are falling.
Well, that was Den with Current Riser, an Australian band. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark,
Garth,
your turn to do some work.
I am going to do some work here with Marty. We're finally going to let him say more than a few words. So welcome again, Marty.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to try and channel my best Alec Baldwin, here's the thing, to pry deeply, but
okay,
but briefly find out a bit about you and your art, what's been happening, what's going to be happening, because our listeners are going to be fascinated.
Mm.
So tell me, what is your first memory when of you being told, hey, you can draw? What's that about? Do you remember that and what you were drawing at the time?
Wow. That's a good question. I don't
it's hard hitting
here,
Marty. Hitting.
I mean, people always ask, you know, when did you start drawing?
Yeah.
And I've always been drawing since I can remember anything. So that's going back a little while.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I don't really remember. I don't think I can answer that question.
You were like out of the womb, you were just brilliant.
No. No, I was terrible, like most kids are, but I think I was encouraged to do it, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So that's why I kept doing it.
Oh, awesome.
And really, that's the only way you get good at something is if I just keep doing it.
Yeah. That's like that's why we turn up here every week.
Yeah.
One day we're going to get good, Garth.
Oh, I hope. I wish.
You're doing pretty good, I think.
Yeah. Oh, well, we get
from
there.
From what I've seen.
Now, Marty, as a kid, I used to draw fire trucks.
Mm.
It was because one of my mates was really good at drawing fire trucks. I just used to copy him mostly.
Yeah.
And the other thing I remember drawing a lot of, I was about 10, stick men on surfboards with like massive big waves and shark's fins in the waves, okay?
Awesome.
What were you drawing when you were about 10 or so?
10.
Yeah, so grade 2, grade 3, something like that.
Well, Ninja Turtles.
Oh!
Absolutely.
I'm going to draw a Ninja Turtle just so that Marty knows how, skillful I am.
Yeah.
All right.
I was a massive Ninja Turtle fan.
Yes.
I was born in England, so most of my family is in England.
Okay.
And they would always send me presents for birthdays and Christmases. Everything was Ninja Turtles.
Oh, awesome.
So from all my family, everything Ninja Turtles. Loved it. And that's what I would draw most of the time.
Fantastic. So, and do you think that then led you to if I call it cartoony style, you know, I'm not having to go at the quality of your art, but you know what I mean? Like, it does have a cartoony style, a lot of it. Do you think maybe that love of the Ninja Turtles and the fact they were a cartoon led you down that cartoony path?
Well, now that I think about it, probably, okay. But I've never really thought about it before.
Because... yes, another one for the Dice Man!
Yeah, you're coming up with some good questions here.
What an exclusive!
Yeah.
After, you know, growing up a little bit, I got into lots of different things.
Yeah.
So comic books and graphic novels and all sorts of stuff. So I really diverted a little bit from that cartoony aspect. But I guess it's kind of coming back, I suppose.
Well, it's funny because when I look at your art, and it is absolutely amazing. I mean, people should be absolutely checking out your Instagram account.
Yeah, give a shout out, Marty. Do a little bit of self promotion.
What's your Instagram?
The Instagram is at ableart, so ABELART.
And look, I have spent hours poring over it. I've been through this sort of stage. Like, I'm a little bit older. You might not be able to tell by looking at me, but I'm a little bit older.
Tell at all.
And a while ago, I got this fascination with skin art, tattoos.
Yep.
Because I never had one.
Yep.
I was in the Navy for a long time, so I was always very close to getting one.
Yeah, you should have heaps.
And I started watching Ink Master.
Okay.
And this whole battle between old school, new school, you know, very traditional tattoos, and this new school is very cartoony. You know, you see the pin-ups, which you've done a lot of, and I'm going to talk about those again in a minute. But that sort of cartoony look, which I guess has come from perhaps people growing up with The Simpsons and Futurama and those sort of things being much more mainstream than they were back in my day. You know, comics were in the comics.
Mm.
And you didn't see that stuff on TV. And in fact, I still remember going to the movies, and The Simpsons was a short at the movies. That's the first time it had ever appeared.
And it was in black and white.
Garth, now you've been silly. But so perhaps, you know, the mainstreaming of cartoons, graphic novels, those sort of things has led to that, people being really, really interested in that. But do you get a lot of requests for people to design, for you to design tattoos for people?
All the time.
Yeah?
Yep.
And I get that look. It looks like it's not your favourite thing.
No.
Do I need to do another skull with snakes coming out of its eyeballs?
To be honest, I don't really remember if I've ever actually designed anybody's tattoo except for my own.
Okay.
Which I didn't really want to do.
Yeah. but people take your images that you've already done and then turn them into tattoos?
People are going to do whatever they want, basically, and I can't really stop them. A lot of nice people actually come and they ask me and they say, is it okay if I take this and I, you know, get it inked? And I'm basically say, yes, go for it, because, well, and I can't stop you anyway.
That'll be $2,000, please.
Well, I guess because you have built a career from your art and going around Australia to various conventions, be it
Supernova
art style, or you have gone to tattoo conventions, is that right?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so it's understandable that people will get some ink of that that genre done.
I think it comes back to, you mentioned the pin-up girls
that
I used to draw. That sort of really phases into the sort of the tattoo kind of
culture.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, pin-up is a big thing in tattoos. Yeah. That's right. And so I wanted to – I'll come back to the pin-ups in a second. But at what stage did you realise, hey, I can – I'm good at this. I can actually make money. In fact, I might be able to make enough money that this could be like a job? What? When did that happen?
Again, good question.
Yeah.
I always knew that I would be doing this. I never really thought about the money or how I'd actually do it. Like, it never really popped in my
head. Did you use the skills to counterfeit money? Is that how you managed to survive this long?
I drew my own $5 notes and all sorts of things.
Yeah. So you never had like a fallback career that you thought, oh, well, I can always make a good coffee, or I can always go and work in a bank, or...
I've got nothing
apart from this. That's brilliant. So, that is living on the edge, man. I've only
ever had one job, and that was working at Safeway.
Yeah.
That lasted about 4 months when I was about 15 or something.
Well, look, it's no wonder, because I report regularly for this show on Kickstarter. So I'd like to think I know lots about Kickstarter, but what I didn't know, Marty, was that you had a Kickstarter.
I did.
Where over 500 people handed over, and I know they don't hand it to you directly, but they handed over $56,000 for I think that's Australian, for your book of pinup drawings.
That's correct.
Yes. Yeah, so tell us the story of how you came up with the idea of putting that on Kickstarter.
Well, Kickstarter had been around for a couple of years before I did that, and I'd sort of seen people have used it for art books and things like that.
It was 2015, is that right?
Yeah, 2015. Yeah. Yep, so a few years ago now. But I just thought maybe I could give it a go. I mean, I sort of had a, without sounding terribly egotistical, I had a little bit of a following online anyway.
Yes, yes.
And that is really what you need for a Kickstarter, unless you're a whiz at promotion or something. So I kind of was a little bit confident that it would be okay. And we put the goal very, very low. And I say we because my partner, Jamie, was working for me at the time. Oh, we were working together.
Yeah, yeah. She's like your manager.
Yeah, she's the manager and she works way harder than I do. So we basically did the Kickstarter together.
Yeah.
And she was like, put the price, the goal really, really low. I think it was a little bit too low, to be honest, but...
But it didn't matter at the end, does it? I mean, that's the thing. And I think we say this so many times with our game Kickstarters is, look, put a really low target, because people look and go, oh, no, that'll never fund, and don't put their money in. Whereas if it's pretty much guaranteed to fund, they throw money. And then once it starts to blow through, you know, you have stretch goals and things like that where you can get more and more people in. But, yeah, I mean, congratulations on that one. That was so great. And so... Before then, that's when you were doing things like what I saw was Ralph Magazine, Xbox Magazine, couple of other magazines. You were doing some – so obviously that's paid work. Was that before the pinups?
Kind of, yeah. I think it was. I mean, I started out in about 2003.
Yeah.
And one of my first jobs
– You're like five.
I was my first job was Ralph Magazine. I think going back to it.
Never read it. Not interested.
No, it didn't last very long.
I liked it for the articles.
It was, look.
I used to live next door to a swimsuit model, actually, when I lived in Sydney.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. She used to love and come play with my kids who were like 2 and 3 at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was very nice.
It was like I didn't know what to do out of college.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do art, and I just emailed as many magazines and sort of companies as I could that I thought my art might fit into. And Ralph Magazine was one of the first people that actually gave me a chance.
Oh, wow.
Even though I don't think my art was very good at the time.
Yeah.
So that was basically where I started. Xbox Magazine, same sort of thing. Just emailed them, what have you got to lose? And they gave me a shot as well.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And that lasted a couple of years.
Now I've got to declare a conflict of interest here.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw today you did some work with Telstra Global Sales.
Yes.
And I work for another telco, an opposition to Telstra. But the sort of the style of the like, let's call it a comic, like, because it was a series of panels, not just like one picture.
Yeah.
I look at that and I think about Telstra Global Sales, and I sort of think, how did those two things come together? Tell us that story.
Yeah, look, it's really weird when I talk about my work, because I've done a lot of very strange things. I work for an agency called the Jackie Winter Group.
Ah, yeah.
based in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And they're basically global, really. They get clients from all over the place, really, really big clients, yeah, like Telstra.
Yeah.
If I knew that I'd be drawing comics for Telstra, I just wouldn't. Yeah. If somebody told me that, yeah, I wouldn't believe them. Yeah. Like, it's just weird. Yeah, so that was, it was a great job and it was a terrible job.
Yeah.
There was probably about 20 different stories that I had to do, and they were only one page.
Yeah.
And these people who come up with the ideas, they didn't, they weren't writers.
No.
Okay. They, these stories,
I did have a look at these stories.
These, yes, stories were terrible, and I had to make them look, yeah, good. So it was hard.
Okay. Now, what I've seen as well, so clearly you've done, like, I'm old school. I'm talking about comics, but of course, mm-hmm, now we're talking about graphic novels.
Yep.
You've also been doing covers.
I have.
For graphic novels.
Mostly like trade paperback comics, but, okay, yeah.
I'm always, see, Leon's same our thing, graphic, man, novel man,
yep,
and we're always fighting about, well, is it a comic, is it a graphic novel? Trade paperbacks, I would call those graphic novels, but you're right, they're often, they're collections of,
yeah, graphic comics, novels would be the collection, yeah, collected version. Yeah.
So you've done some covers.
Yep.
Have you ever done your own, like, art within the comic or within the graphic novel?
I have, but not for a number of years.
Okay.
I worked for a company called, oh God, Viper Comics. Yes. I almost forgot. Viper Comics were a little indie sort of company based out in Texas, and they came up with their smash hit was a comic called Dead at 17, and that's what got me interested in that company.
Sounds like so much fun.
This was around about 2005, yeah, so quite a while ago, and that's where I first got my sort of, my go at doing
intro into the graphic novel world.
Yeah, interior work, sorry. Yeah. And that was good, but the problem with small companies is they really can screw you around,
yeah,
for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened to me, and I sort of lost the passion for comics for a while.
Yeah.
And there's really not a lot of money in it,
okay,
to support yourself.
Yeah.
So it was, I really moved on from that, and I focused on other things.
Yeah, because when I look at a lot of your stuff, for me, I was thinking, oh, wow, I'd love to see some of these characters. And like I was saying, drumsticks. Some of these, yeah, pin-up characters, and you've done drumsticks,
mm-hmm,
you've done bottle openers. I mean, anything that you can put these amazing images on, they look absolutely awesome, I got to say. I'm in love with them.
Thank you.
Particularly one. But never mind. I look at those and I think, wow, I want to know a story about that character.
Mm.
A graphic novel is obviously a great way to do that. But then you've got to have, I guess, potentially work then with a writer to get them to put a story together. And then that, I've heard it said, that's a very difficult collaboration because artist is creating a world, writer is creating a world that's mostly in their mind, and them getting that onto the page and then having you, rather than bringing your world to life, you're bringing their world to life.
Yep.
That can be a really difficult journey. So have you thought about doing your own graphic novels?
Too many times to mention. It's still one of my main goals is to do my own graphic novel, fantasy-based sort of thing. It's really a whole bunch of ideas at this point. It's really not even a story. I keep saying, oh, I'm working on this story, but it's a whole bunch of ideas, let's face it. Whether it'll happen one day, we'll see.
All right, now, Mark.
Yes.
Can you start talking about Crystal Clans?
Oh, yeah,
we're running out of time.
I wanted to bring it back to gaming now.
Perfect. Good timing.
Just before Crystal Clans, though. Yep. So you do have a lot of fantasy art, and clearly Crystal Clans is fantasy art. Have you done work around for role-playing? Because I look at it and I go, oh, this is some awesome stuff. You know, Wizards of the Coast, D&D, those sort of people would love this sort of stuff.
I've never done anything else in terms of fantasy commercial work at all, I think, which is why I really jumped on this job when it came across.
Because, this could open a lot of doors.
Yeah, fantasy sort of crept into my psyche in the last 3 or 4 years, and it's just something I've been really passionate about.
Okay.
So, yeah, when that email came across, I'm like, I didn't even know who the company was.
Yeah, well, I was going to say.
That's how oblivious I am.
How did Plaid Hat discover you?
I've recently found out. I haven't asked them, but I've found out by listening to another podcast.
Yeah.
What? There's other podcasts?
Apparently, they're not very good. Don't worry about that.
Nah,
where I think Colby mentioned someone in the art department follows me on Instagram.
Ah.
So there you go. Another win for Instagram.
Yeah.
And so what was their – when they came to you with this, how did they pitch it? What was their design brief?
I can't remember. It's so long ago, and I've done so much work for them.
Yeah,
it's just that my brain is a mush.
Yeah.
probably just saying that it's a tabletop fantasy game with a whole bunch of cards and dynamic characters and clans. And I was like, I'm sold, basically.
So did you come up with the clans, or did they pitch the clans to you?
No, all the ideas are them.
Okay.
And they've got some great ideas.
Yeah.
They really have.
So they almost basically said, okay, here's 27 cards that are all from the Flower Clan. This is the name we want. This is what they're going to do. Make them come to life. Yep. Is that right?
Well, there's 27 cards, but there's actually only nine actual cards, really.
Yeah.
There's multiples. So every clan has nine characters or things like that. And I sort of knew from the offset that each card could have up to four characters drawn on the one card.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah, it's a lot of work when it comes down to it because, yeah, it just takes so long.
Yeah, well, it was huge. And so that was basically, again, you taking their ideas and bringing them to life, but, of course, with your own twist on whether it's the flowers, whether it's the skeleton people or the water people or whatever. There's lots of different ones. So did they come back and say, oh, well, Marty, we really like this. Oh, no, is Colby's Canadian, I think.
Don't try
anyway, accent. You know, we really like this, but we wanted a bit more like this. Did they try and exercise much editorial control?
I have to say, Plaid Hat Games have been the best client I've ever had.
Oh, awesome.
Since starting in 2003.
Yeah.
And doing all sorts of crazy things.
Wow.
They're seriously amazing. I've done probably over 120 different illustrations for them now.
Wow.
And I've hardly had to change a thing.
Hang on, I'm going to say, I'm kidding. There's not 120 illustrations in this card.
Well, look, I'm just guessing, so don't quote me on that.
No, you know something about these expansions,
I do,
don't
you? So we should probably talk about them before the time runs out.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've done quite a few. What do you want to know?
Well, clearly there are expansions coming because you don't make a game like this and don't have plans
for
expansions.
Well, it mentions it in the rule book,
That's right. That's the thing I found fascinating was clearly there is room for deck building in this.
Yes.
But in the basic game, no deck building rules. But it does refer to, this particular symbol on the card, that relates to deck building. That'll come at a future date. So what's the future date? What's next for Crystal Clans?
I think you can pre-order some expansions right now, which is the Shadow Clan and I'm trying to remember. I think it might be...
Is it the Fang?
There's
like a beastie clan, isn't there, with bears
and... Yeah, it could be
and...
Fang. Yeah. I think you're right.
Okay.
Yeah. I should know this.
Good work, Garth.
I'm just too busy drawing these expansions.
It's a tough life, isn't it?
It is.
But look, the thing is with Plaid Hat is that they don't release a hell of a lot of games, but what they are well known for is really high production qualities.
I don't think they've had made a misstep with their game production. They always look amazing. They usually always play really well. I have loved almost everything I've played of theirs. I mean, Dead of Winter is one of our favourite games, hands
down. Well, it's replaced Battlestar Galactica for a lot of people in terms of that Betrayer game. But look, you've only got a couple of minutes, Mark.
Sorry, yeah.
So let's wrap it up before Marty has to go out and start drawing on the streets.
So you've got some new clans coming.
Yep.
Are you adding extra, or is there plans to add extra cards to the existing clans?
Not that I'm aware of,
okay.
And I don't get told very much at all. I'm on a strictly need-to-know basis. I mean, I didn't even know really how the game played until recently.
Okay.
And I've only played it twice myself.
I only
just got the game a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I've had to convince my girlfriend to play it with me.
How did you go?
We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously I'm a noob to this whole world.
Yeah.
So we were very slow. Our first game probably took about 2 hours.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
Ah, fair enough.
Because we're both noobs.
That's all good though.
Yeah.
It's great that you're dipping your toe into this hobby that you are now very much a part of.
And that's right. I mean, I guess it says a lot for a game where, as someone, excuse me, very inexperienced, you've thrown this down in front of you, both of you being inexperienced, and managed to nut it out within 2 hours. Like, that's actually quite amazing.
Yeah, we worked it out and we had a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Yeah, awesome. What's your favourite clan?
You mean in the base game?
Yeah.
I would say, at the moment, the Blood Clan.
We didn't play with those.
That's the skeletons and everything, isn't it?
That's the swampy guys.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason for is that you can have as many units as you want and build them massively.
Yeah, cool. All right, we might have to borrow the game because we were lucky enough to borrow Marty's copy for a week so that we were able to play it because it hasn't been seen in Tassie too much yet. So, look,
Yeah, because it was only the release date is only quite recent, isn't it?
Yeah, last month, I think.
Yeah, and when you were at, Garth mentioned meeting you at AICon, that was just after it had been released, is that right?
Yep, I'd only had it a few days.
Wow.
There you go. I had to go up and go, oh, I'm Garth, are you Martin? And he went, yeah, who are you?
So one more.
All right,
Marty,
this is it.
Yeah. So, Marty, are we going to see a Marty Abel graphic novel? When can I pencil that into my diary? Because I'm certainly going to get a copy. And what's it going to be about? Pitch me, give me the elevator pitch of the story.
Oh, I can't really give you an elevator pitch.
No.
I can't do that confidently because it's, like I said, it's a whole bunch of ideas that I'm trying to squeeze together into a story. I would hope before 2020 you see something.
Oh, fantastic.
Because it starts with a beaten down employee of Safeway.
That's it, man. That's it.
Look, Marty, thank you so much to put up with my grilling. I'm so excited they actually said I had some decent questions because I was really nervous because, you had an interview that I saw on the web, on the internet with the Sydney Morning Herald, a couple of art magazines, obviously, what was the name of the agency in Melbourne again?
Jackie Winter.
Yep. I saw you on their website. Look, for people out there who want to have a look at your art, obviously your Instagram, you just got to Google Martin Abel art on the internet. There's so many amazing pictures out there. I've had this dilemma about tattoos and things, and I've never found an image that I thought, yep, I'd be happy to have that image on my arm for the rest of my life. Mm. I'll tell you what, I'm starting to get close.
Well, I appreciate all the compliments you're throwing my way. I really do.
It's amazing. And we had a lot of fun with this game. It's really lovely to look at and engaging. So excited to see. I think this is going to open a lot of doors for you, I reckon, in the tabletop world. So I think we're really excited to see where you're going to go next.
And it's pretty amazing to have you in Tasmania.
I'm excited to be here.
There we go. Not many people say that. So look, we've only got a couple of minutes left on the show, so we're not going to throw to a song, but we are going to quickly shout out us and five other people who are forming the Kanga Committee.
Yep.
Now, the Kangas are the newest Australian tabletop award that was only announced a couple of days ago through all the social medias and the Facebook and what have you. Now, what the Kanga is, for those who do not know but would like to find out more, jump onto Facebook and type in Kanga and find the right page, or send us an email and we'll tell you the details. But the Kanga is basically an Australian media tabletop award where we're focusing solely on Australian involvement in tabletop games. So there are going to be initially three categories. There's going to be best game, there's going to be best visuals and best gameplay. And the thing that I'm really excited about is that every single game that we are going to be considering for these awards have Australian involvement. It'll be an Australian designer or an Australian illustrator or an Australian graphic designer or an Australian publisher. Every single game we talk about will have been touched or created by an Australian. And that's going to be a first in the Australian tabletop hobby, which I am so, so, so excited about.
Yeah, and for someone like Marty, where he's working with an international company, well, you wouldn't have been considered in the Australian award, any Australian awards before because the game wasn't produced in Australia.
Right.
And then obviously all the other big international awards, if Plaid Hat aren't sort of targeting their game at those, there's not much chance of recognition.
I'm just left out in the cold.
Yeah. Whereas now, as an Australian illustrator, as an Australian artist, doesn't matter what game you work on in the world and who with, because you're Australian, you're automatically going to be considered for the Kanga Awards.
Exactly.
For in the certainly it'll be the we've got the best game.
Best visuals.
Best visuals and best gameplay. So clearly in the best visuals. Marty, not giving any tips so far because we're a long way away from judging, but you're certainly going to be up for consideration with all those other great Australian artists.
That's right. So it is early days. We've only announced it. We've been working on it behind the scenes for months and months. So we've put in a hell of a lot of effort with this. So we've got people from the Campaigner magazine. We've got people from GoToGame. We've got Ella, who created World of Women, which is a massive board gaming space as well.
Yeah, grouping.
We've got Angelus from Storyboarder. We've got the three of us on there. So it's an initial judging team of seven people.
Yeah.
But we're really excited to see how that goes. Now, we do have to draw a line in the sand and call it quits for this show.
I know. We've had
done a lot of talking.
Oh, look, Marty, thank you so much for joining us, mate. It's been lovely to meet you, lovely to see your art, and lovely to find out a bit more about you. I'm so excited.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to see where you're going to go, because I can see, you know, you're a very talented man, and I reckon the board game companies are going to be knocking on your door.
Far enough. You guys are going to have to hug it out soon. So look, we have been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been Edge Radio 99.3. We are, of course, saying thank you to Area 52, but we are also saying thanks to Marty. So if you are interested and want to see a bit of his art, check him out at Abel Art, A-B-E-L Art, on Instagram. Join 100,000+ other people who follow him, so he's got a little bit of a fan base. Otherwise, join us on Instagram. We've got tens of followers. It's all good.
Garth, we've got over 1,700 followers.
There we go. That's pretty spectacular.
Don't laugh it off. I put a lot of effort into that.
Fine, and on that note, we are out of here for episode 211. We will see you again next week.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.